Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
It does. If it had its own lever or a button like it used to, it would do a better job because it would take pride in what it's doing. So it's partly on strike.
So you walk through into a hallway. There's a wax policeman at the end of the hallway.
It starts welling up and he just goes, I'm going to sell the speedster.
Hello and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number 48. It's a late recording. All of us have been working hard, toiling actually, in our individual professions. Some of them are serious, some of them are not. I'm very cold and a bit bunged up because it was really, really wind chilly out filming today in Wales, but I've had a great day and I feel energised to sit down with my fellow addicts and talk utter bobbins about cars. And there's no better way to start talking bobbins than this week's first point on the agenda, which just says rear wipers. I don't even know where to go with that, but the man that wrote it, Neil Kibber, can start us off.
Well, I'm always disappointed with rear wipers because they're never as good as you bloody want them to be. Yeah. And the reason why I wrote this, because we'll talk about it later in the what have you done in cars this week, because I've got a new car with a rear wiper, which takes an hour to find how to get the thing to go because it's a 1990s Audi, for Christ's sake. God knows why I bought that. I did have pneumonia. But then to find out how to get the wiper to work takes ages. And then when you actually get it working, it's crap.
You wonder why you bothered.
So I think instead of having this, really someone should have designed a rear wiper that did that.
Yeah. Totally with you on that.
Because that is not good enough.
Shit.
I only use 50% of the bloody windscreen. And then the wiper's obviously shit because no one's ever replaced it from new. So it actually doesn't work at all anyway because it's 30 years old and made of plasticine. So I'm very disappointed about rear wipers. There is a whole thing about should you delete the rear wiper if you own a Porsche and a 964 Carrera 2 is worth 10 grand more if it's got the rear wiper delete, if I remember. That's the case, Mr. Harris, isn't it?
It could be. Right, we've done rear wipers. Let's move on.
I wanted to...
So I agree, but, you know, old editorial lessons... If you say something's rubbish, to do so, you have to offer a solution. And just going like that, you know, what does that look like? What what rubberized wiping element is required to do that? How would you integrate it attractively?
I'm sure a German could figure that out.
The fact that a German hasn't yet probably means it's quite difficult. So it's an odd thing. I find the windscreen wiper delete on 911 is very interesting because for me, I like having, if you use the car year round, it's great having the wiper.
You've got to have one.
And I don't mind the look of it. It's quite an interesting German contraption. It reminds me of those little ones that used to be on the front of 6 Series headlights. It's got a lot of filaments. It's a bit insectile, the way that it looks. It looks like it could be the blade of a wing of a beetle or something. Here's the question for you then, Neil, and fellow addicts. What's the best rear wiper you've used? Can you answer that question?
I can answer the best wiper, and it was triggered in my brain through your lovely video of the SL70. I love the front wiper on an R.
Is that a single arm wiper?
It's cantilever.
That's a really great wiper.
Sort of goes.
So rear wipers, they are more disappointing than not. I agree. They tend to, if you buy an old estate car, and I seem to do that the whole time, the thing that's always not working is the rear wiper and the rear wiper washer. They seem to be engineered to last a couple of hours.
No one uses them. They all get blocked up. They're all shit. The wiper never gets replaced. It's all gone.
But I mean, there's quite a long distance, isn't there, between the wiper fluid and the back window. You've got a big long.
Some have a separate reservoir in the back.
Some used to have, and I bemoan the day when the separate reservoir for a rear windscreen wiper was deleted. That was a sad day.
There is the clarion call for the addicts. Yeah. I bemoan the day. I think I can see that the rear wiper is an issue, but also I think companies like Mercedes-Benz, you know, when Mercedes-Benz was so far ahead of the rest that they had ribbed rear tail lights so that you wouldn't get dirt inside the ribs. You get better projection of light. They used to design cars so that the rear screen didn't get covered in crap when you were driving along. You know, the shape of the car was determined by function rather than form. And I think a lot of modern designs, you end up just with the moment you go more than 20 miles an hour on a slightly down road, you look in the mirror and go, there wasn't enough water on the road to do that to the rear screen. Where's it come from? I think, it's a curious piece of engineering, and the fact that no one's found a better solution makes me think there isn't one.
I think there's so many clever people out there.
The 911 shape, and they've tried to do it in Panamera, is the shape that means the dirt does not accumulate on the rear window.
Yeah.
Well,
it depends, doesn't it? It does, sort of. Last night I was trying to remember, and I got the quote wrong because I thought it was a Shelby quote, and then I just Googled it and remembered, and it's Franco off the Gumball rally when he rips the rear view mirror off and he goes, water behind me doesn't matter. So maybe get rid of the rear wiper and the rear view mirror and then it won't matter.
It's funny because I as you know, spend my time reading about these things, and effectively a car punches a hole in the air. And so what you have is a vacuum at the back. And their argument was, I read an American website, a sedan, a saloon, has got a great big boot between you and the vacuum. So the air that's coming up, which is whacking mud or water onto your rear windscreen, is massively impeded by having a boot. The problem you have is if you've got a hot hatch or you've got an estate, you basically have a vertical or a very, very, and actually they said it was Porsche. It's going to turn into a bit of a Porsche podcast, but it was Porsche who came up with that solution, as you guys all know, which I did not. But I did love the very first windscreen wiper because it was like doing this with your head, very Indian way. It is rather elegant, actually, the first one. My Audi A4 Avant's got a fantastic wiper. It's just an elbow and it does a perfect 180 degree arc. And there are just the corners missing. So,
is it?
Defense of a good windscreen wiper, I think, with the fulcrum right in the middle at the bottom of the windscreen and 180 degree sweep, it does a pretty good job.
I think it does have to be. That's a good point you've made. I mean, Neil, I think really windscreen wipers are really disappointing. They're just meh.
What, in terms of their
they never work as much
their
as
personalities, their conversational appeal, or
all of the above. Actually, no. Well, as we know, it is always funnier in the front. So when you time you get to the rear windscreen, by the time you get to the rear windscreen wiper, it's really dire. The ones Range Rovers, I think, still have, and lots of SUVs still have, the windscreen wiper, which is sort of
hidden in the top of the windscreen behind that little spoiler thing.
Oh, it comes that way.
Yes. It goes that way. And that just stores water and muck and rubbish at the top
makes
of the windscreen.
Makes no sense.
It dribbles off the end.
Yeah, makes no sense.
And then you have, I've got to press the button again. But the worst, the daftest rear windscreen wiper I've seen, it tends to be on VW vans or, well, there's a rear windscreen wiper on the back of the van.
Yeah.
Who thought that was a good idea? And they're always going, I mean, I know I've said I hate rear fog lights because I'm doing an Alan Partridge to say, your fog lights are on. Rear windscreen wipers. Your rear windscreen wipers are on.
Yeah.
The really irritates me when you see, no, hang on, it's dry. I can, it's stressing. It's probably going to start scratching this glass. And the little electric motor will be getting hot because it's.
We missed this off our OCD, I think, in terms of where
the stress of the little copper coils and that motor getting hotter and hotter and all shouting.
So a couple of things about rear windscreen wipers in defense of. I think this is cause and effect. At least two of you here are natural leaders. Maybe all of you are natural leaders, and I'm not. I'm subservient. But I think the rear windscreen wiper has taken, it's been subjugated in the modern car control vernacular, because it doesn't have its own button anymore. It's been reduced to having it's a sort of supplementary function to your normal wipers, your front wipers, and therefore it's never going to work properly. It's not been encouraged in the workplace. It's been left there. All you do is nudge it forwards, a cursory nudge. It does. If it had its own lever or a button like it used to, it would do a better job because it would take pride in what it's doing. So it's partly on strike. It's gone, fuck all.
If you don't give me my own lever,
I'm going to do half the job.
So if you press a button, am I right in saying, so if you press a button, it's just on. Is that yes or no?
Edward, it deserves its own control function. At the moment, it's buried. It's a sideshow. It's basically a fluffer to a front wiper.
Okay. My rear wiper product knowledge is not very good. Is a rear wiper automated in the same way that you have a sensor on the window?
No.
That's what it needs. Because, see, a rear wiper, if you're driving down the motorway, if I leave London now and drive to Cornwall,
You know why that's so flawed? Those beams
fences
only work if you've got a clear screen. And of course, the rear screen's covered in dirt. So it would always be confused.
Well, that's sort of fair
enough.
You rarely need to use the rear wiper.
No, you want it
driving down the motorway. You don't really need to clean the rear screen, do you?
Unless there's a lot of standing water.
You want it every half an hour.
25 minutes. 25
right,
minutes.
We are going to invent the rear screen.
Can you imagine Neil's perfect windscreen wiper for a Countach rear window?
Yeah, just... Well, even the other one that's interesting is the GR Yaris. How on earth do you wipe that weird rear window? You just can't.
Yeah,
it's got one though.
Oh, has that got a top one? Or is that
It's got a thing about that.
Little toppy, yes.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, yeah.
That the thing's about as long as the thing you strike a triangle with if you're the special one in the orchestra.
Yeah,
I reckon.
I was thinking about this earlier on today as well, and I sent that little clip to you of my friend Malcolm, who now lives in Australia,
who was a
Formula One designer and blah blah blah. And I don't know whether this is still in the rules, Manish. You might know this. Until recently, one of the rules in Formula One was that the driver must be seated in the car in a forward-facing position. Wasn't allowed to face backwards. And I thought, in what world would anybody think that's a smart idea?
The kind of world where Colin Chapman would have found something.
He'd found an advantage. I wonder what sort of rear wiper mechanism Adrian Newey could come up with for a rearward sack.
Do you know what? If there's two where motorsport and filming collide is in that technology when you have the whirring thing. Remember the karting discs that go in front of the motor?
Yeah.
They have one of those. They have one of those that run on a gyro in front of a camera. Manish will know this. If you're filming on a tracking car in the wet, they can put this thing on the front of the camera that whirs around, and you can just throw gallons of water at it, and it the lens doesn't get wet. It's amazing.
That's good.
So there's a couple of cars who you always see with that slightly disappointing failed wiper look, where it becomes a dangler and it's sort of going over the bodywork, and it's a very disappointing.
Oh no, if it touches the bodywork.
Okay, there's the Passat they made in the early 2000s. When they get old, they droop. They do that.
Mm. You had one of those, didn't you?
Yes, and its wiper just fell down like that. Yeah. In fact, you know what? I was at the Bicester Scramble at the weekend, and a bloke came up to me. He's a really lovely man. I won't say his name. And he said, "Do you remember your Passat?" And I went, "No." He went, "It's still in my dad's shed." And I went,
"Wow."
"I haven't seen it for 10 years." He went, "We know."
That must smell quite bad. Was
the wiper went on that. But the worst wiper mechanism of all was the E34 BMW 5 Series Touring. Because they insisted on having this extra flap so you could open the glass on its own.
And we're talking about tailgate.
But the way that it worked was that when you shut the glass, the wiper mechanism had to meet another part, and male and female part had to meet for the wiper to work. And if the wiper wasn't in the right position, all you did when you shut the boot, it was bend both bits, and you shanked the rear wiper immediately. And so whoever designed that really does deserve a turd sandwich, because that's a terrible... That's the worst rear wiper I've ever come across.
That is quite shit.
Is there one car where the wipers are in the A and B pillars, or is that where they do sometimes?
At the front, but we're talking about rear wipers.
Yeah. Sorry.
And here's one. Do we know of a car that's ever had twin rear wipers?
Is there a Volvo?
Oh, there's got to be one.
I saw a picture of it. I think it was a 1970 Volvo.
Let's get Chris Cooper being extremely lucid on the subject. Whilst he's doing that, I'll Google twin. He's doing it now.
E-Type and Bristol 400 is triple front.
Yeah.
And the 993 had that lovely double blade wiper.
Yeah.
One and a half. It's like a one and a half.
Really. Yeah. A bit of cantilever in there.
The 6.9 450 had a... like
we've adequately done, in inverted commas, rear wipers, or does anyone else have anything they want to say?
I think we do. Neil, when you and I were at Bicester for the Movember thing, and we looked at that 911, it was forest green, Tiptronic, rear wiper, PDC sensors back in the 996 era. Some 911s look really odd with a rear wiper, because obviously an option.
I quite like a 911 with a rear wiper.
Yeah.
I must have deleted it, because I don't think I've got one on the 991.
Can I be really, really geeky? For me, G-Series, 80s Carrera, wiper has to be spoiler delete. It only works. The wiper looks wrong if it's got a whale tail, but if it's got the wiper looks wrong.
Yeah.
I think it's much better spoiler delete anyway.
Yeah, but someone
unless
like
it's a turbo.
Someone like you needs the downforce on the road.
You need the downforce. He's the last person that needs
it. As long as I've got winter tyres, I'll be okay.
Right, we're done with rear wipers. And we'll revisit it if someone can tell us of a twin rear wiper setup on a streetcar. The next thing I've got is This Week in Cars. Well, many of us have done lots of things in cars this week. So let's start with Chris Cooper. What have you done in cars this week?
Well, we've got to start with the Bicester Scramble, haven't we?
Yep.
So managed to have very sadly missed, but the rest of us were at the Scramble, which was effing cold.
It was really managed. We're not designed for that climate, mate. It was so cold. It was ridiculous. It was gloves, double socks, thermals, and I still, it was too cold.
And my wife went blue even with that.
Yeah.
I knew I dodged a bullet when I saw the WhatsApp text.
No, you didn't dodge a bullet. It was still better than not being there.
But it's just lovely. It's just
it's great.
There's so many nice people. There's such an eclectic mixture of metal and cars, from really, really old rubbishy stuff that, you know, we might bring along or I might bring along. And there's some really, it's a coming together of interesting people
It's great.
With a simple passion. And it's just lovely. It's, and you know, you meet people you know and you get talking about stuff. And, you know, collecting cars was there. And we had a very interesting chat with Mr. Williams and his FW13B. But yeah, I just think it's such a. And
well,
I.
Jonathan was there.
And Jonathan
we
was there.
We had Jonathan there
that
with
was
Chris.
A car for me.
Yeah.
That was the Audi, yeah.
Is that a 200 Quattro van?
Yeah.
They're monocoque. It's got the wrong wheels. Yeah. Or are those Zender wheels?
Yeah, they're not the real wheels because the normal ones are the three spike.
Yeah, but also don't forget there were two tuners that were allowed to play with those with factory backing. It might be one of them.
Yeah, that I thought was really cool. That James Bond had one, didn't he? Once
he did, but also he did in Living Daylights.
Yeah, that was a saloon.
It was a saloon with BBS crossboats.
It did, and it had
front, the front headrests had fillers in them. They
200 saloon, 200 saloon,
and it was in the same scene as the Harrier jump jet.
Yeah, when they get the Russian out.
That was pretty cool. So the thing I mean, this is, did anyone see at the, can you see that?
Honda Pilots?
What are
they're Rage buggies.
Oh, Rages, yeah.
There were two of those there. And I thought, that's a bloody good two-car garage. Those two. So I didn't see who had them. So whoever had the two Rage buggies, because Rage has gone out of business. We know what Rage is. They made these sort of, because a lot of stuff you can get these days sort of falls over. I know when I was teaching my sons how to do skids, and I realized that actually this Polaris thing, other brands are available. Polaris's aren't inherently dangerous, nice lawyers from Polaris, but they do tend to fall over if you try and do skids in them. The Rage thing is just it's got stance. So there were two of them together, one of which had Tamiya branding on the side, which is just the coolest thing. So everything from a Tamiya.
Have a look at that. Let's have a look at the
chat. Can you come a bit closer? Because it was a bit glared. You might have to WhatsApp it to us. Keep coming. Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
look
very
at
cool.
That.
Yeah. Two
of them.
That was lovely. So
that
it's
would roll, that, you could roll that quite easily.
Easy.
You have to try a bit harder.
Okay.
Happy to do
Hear
that.
Something.
Happy to do that.
So my only disappointment about the scramble on Sunday was there are only three this year.
They're not doing the one in the middle of the year, which but there are going to be two large collecting cars events where we will be in the main campus of the site. So our coffee runs will be those missing scrap, that missing scramble plus one.
And I set that up for you, Edward, with no money exchanging hands.
Yeah, it was seamless.
Yes.
So what did you drive there in, Chris?
So I drove in Sausage.
Yeah, which is a Panamera Sport Turismo Turbo with clear glass.
Clear glass in Aventurine Green. Although we all looked at one in the your favourite Porsche dealer in Switzerland managed, the Stade Porsche dealer. And they had an oak green one. I thought, God, I've got envy.
What about that burgundy one with the Cahiba interior?
That's the burgundy one. Yeah, we need that for our Stade office. Clearly, we'll do airport
funds.
If only one of us
knew somebody with influence in Stade.
Oh, there we go.
You know, my son's. I mean, I've been trying to get him into cars. You know, he's quite refractory. But when we went to visit Bernie. He has a garage in his old house. So you walk through into a hallway. There's a wax policeman at the end of the hallway that looks real. I mean, it's beyond Madame Tussauds. It's an American wax policeman. And then what you do
when
is...
When you say wax, you mean W-A-X, not W-A-C-K.
No. Yes, W-A-X, as in Madame Tussauds. Like 6 foot, 1 inch, middle-aged. And the veins are so real. I remember when I first walked in, he was standing there like that, and I went, hi, because I assumed he was a security.
No.
He didn't say anything. And I thought, God, he's well-trained. He just ignores the guests. And then I realized it wasn't real. Anyway, just to the left of that, there's a fantastic garage. And... he has a 300 SL, not even the metallic, metal silver, red leather inside. And I have to say, of all the cars I've seen in ritzy start, this thing. Oof. And Louis Camilleri, the ex-Ferrari head, sent him a birthday present. And Stade is in the canton of Bern, so all the registration plates start BE, and it had, if the registration plate was BE281030, his birthday, which I have to say, made me chuckle.
That's cool.
I'm open to such birthday gifts from my fellow addicts, just to let you know. Manish, this is always a tricky one because you're a metropolitan professional who tends to take public transport because you care about the environment, and you've only ever owned one car. And I always feel very guilty when I say to you, what have you done with cars this week? So tell us anything. Tell us a story. Enlighten us.
I've had a big week in cars. We're working on a couple of projects. But actually, I had a very nice long conversation with a fellow film director who he's a member of the Academy, as in the people who vote for Oscars. And I saw Ferrari at BAFTA here, and he saw Ferrari at the Academy over there. And we had a long conversation about Michael Mann and the Ferrari movie. And I think that's a week in cars. And I know you all quite like it, but we had a bit of an exchange. And we're both pretty big Michael Mann fans. You know, you look at his body of work. I mean, he's made
canon of work.
Yeah, he's made some extraordinary movies. But we both felt there was either something phoned in or just a little bit old about this. Because the film just doesn't work for me because I don't get a sense of who Enzo Ferrari is. I just don't get a sense of his journey on this. And all I'll say about it was he made a little observation, which he said that there's a piece of music in it that Michael Mann has lifted directly from The Insider, which he made years and years ago about tobacco and Russell Crowe.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that for me kind of summed it up. And he was so looking forward to it. I mean, there's some clever bits. It's about 3 months. So, you know, it's not a movie that's trying to take you from the birth of Enzo Ferrari to his death. It's about these three kind of hectic months before the Mille Miglia of 57. But interestingly, he just felt the film didn't work. And I would just end this with the box office in the States has been an absolute disaster. To say it's flopped is just to understate. I think it's made $12 million in the States from 2,500 screens.
Any car film is so much better than any other film because they got cars in.
Yeah.
I think. I haven't seen it yet, only because I was ill when I was supposed to go and see it. But I'm desperately excited to see it because...
You must see it in the cinema, Neil. That's the most important thing. Like, you've just find it in the cinema. Do not watch this on a plasma screen, whatever.
I will definitely like it better than most other films that don't have cars in.
There was a social media post last night from one of the well-known car photographers that runs around London and all over the country to all the events we go at. And he posted this last night. I'm guessing he is 27, 28 years old. Thomas. Just went to see the Ferrari movie. Didn't really rate it at all, to be honest. Bad accents, bad CGI, started slowly, some inaccuracies, and was quite hard to understand follow at times. Can only imagine what it would be like if you're not into cars. Love the wheel-to-wheel action showing cars running, racing around the Italian streets. You know, and if you ask this guy what his dream car is, it'd probably be a Ferrari. But, you know, I'm guessing it's just not going to land with that type of audience and perhaps the audience that go to cinemas.
It sounds brilliant to me.
I'll probably end up watching it on Netflix or something like that.
You need to see it on the big screen. I mean, seen it. I love disagreeing with people. I couldn't disagree with Manish more. I did get a real sense of, maybe it's just it worked for me, but I did get a real sense of an Enzo, and maybe because it's squared with what I pictured when I read that Brock Yates book. I think it's really, we need to be very clear. This is an adaptation or a screenplay based around a particular book written by a particular American author about Enzo. You know, it's not come out of the ether. And that, I don't think there's been enough acknowledgement of that, because that book is quite controversial.
Yeah.
It gave a view of the man that people hadn't really, particularly Italians, hadn't wanted to absorb before that. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a surprise that it wasn't just someone trying to do a load of cod racing. I mean, the Mille Miglia bits are tricky, because you need to have some wheel to wheel to make it look like something's going on. In reality, you've just got cars piling through the countryside on their own, really. It's not a wheel-to-wheel event. The only bit about the film I didn't like was there's a very gratuitous bit at the end that I really felt was a bit unnecessary, and it made me wince, so I didn't like that. But the rest of it, maybe I just, you know, some people like some films, you know. I don't like Gremlins, I like Back to the Future. But this, I agree with Neil that I feel a responsibility to our broader community to celebrate anything that's got a car in a film, and anyone that's brave enough to go against the headwinds of the box office. I mean, everyone knew this wasn't going to make much money in America. Of course it wasn't. But I really did enjoy it. And I've done a podcast with Marino, who was in it, just as a kind of, what's it like being a civilian that gets dragged into the film world? And it's quite interesting. But yeah, I'm normally someone who finds that approach really disappointing. For example, the one car film that when people say it's wonderful that I wince is Le Mans. I think Le Mans, I feel like invoicing Steve McQueen's grave for my time back, because every time I watch it, I just think, what a waste of time.
Oh, I don't like it, though.
So I have the ability. I have the ability to not like car films.
Yeah, yeah.
How can you not like a film where a young stud goes up to a woman and says, would you like a coffee? She looks at his penis facing overall and says, no. And later on, Steve McQueen says to the same woman, can I sit down? And she says, yes. Come on.
I can only judge it on the fact that I walked out of it going, oh, I really enjoyed that. So there you two, if you want to be totally confused, bloke who knows nothing about films and skids cars says he likes it, and the bloke that makes films says he didn't like it.
So we live in a free world, and the most important thing is to find your passion and what makes you happy. Definitely not the Oracle at Delphi.
What was the budget of that picture, Manish?
95 million.
That's going to have to do 200 plus at box office even to start to wash its face.
But we should be careful here, because that means that everyone else is going to go never make another car movie.
Like to see it. I haven't seen it. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it with one of you guys.
I will see it and I will love it.
Yeah. Let's do a collecting.
Let's do that. We ought to go together.
Addicts. Let's go see it.
Selfridges.
We could do it there.
It's a good place to see it, Selfridges.
Or the one, Neil, that's between you and me, the one that sort of the one in Berkhamsted where you can sit down and have.
Yeah, they won't have it on because they'd be all too weird, funny, wokey films in there.
They'll have the Méprise on again.
Go to your local Everyman. I do quite like an Everyman.
It is a
Well, I was going to take the team next week, actually, from the
Selfridges.
Office. Yeah.
Let's
do it there.
A few years ago, I went to the Everyman in the city in which I live. And I was on my own in the auditorium, apart from one other man who, during the second half of the film, was asked to leave because he was masturbating.
He definitely was the everyman.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Rolling cinema.
What's our next topic? Okay, we've got.
Hang on a minute.
No one else has done.
Right, what, Neil, we don't know what Neil's done this week.
Edward Lovett, what have you done this week other than be a legend?
Fine. Well, I'll run through mine pretty quickly. The week started off on Sunday. I had the family in central London. We had lunch at Ciccone's. And we got in the car which it's just an Italian.
Just to make it relevant,
what you've done all week, because what you've done in cars.
Well, right, anyway, we drove.
Did you begin with a firm stool?
No. We drove there. Anyway, we got in the car, and then we started. And look, Clint, by the way, we are in.
How long is this going to take?
2 minutes in, I haven't even said the word car yet.
Goodness sake! Obviously, if you're driving to into Mayfair to go for lunch. Now, if you're a car guy, you're probably going to navigate yourself around Berkeley Square so you can have a quick look in the window at the Ferrari and the Bentley showroom. And then you probably leave up Berkeley Street so you can see what's in the Rolls-Royce showroom and now the new Lotus showroom. But anyway, forget all of those showrooms. Seeing someone on a crisp winter's day in London driving around in a 1920s 4.5 litre Bentley.
Lovely.
You just think,
perfect.
I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
And I would say it was probably a 60-year-old man who looked very healthy and wealthy with a probably late 30s, early 40s blonde lady with a leather hat on. She also looked very healthy and wealthy.
It could have been me.
Yeah, could have been Neil. Could have been Neil. Bit more tan than you, Neil. Bit more tan than you.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was Sunday. No, sorry. That was Saturday. That was Saturday. And then Sunday, I joined these boys up at the Scramble. So first time outside of the M25 since the start of December.
Since the start of COVID.
No, since the start of December.
This is like a really weird version of that Craig David song. Carry on.
No, so as ever, you know, my Speedster is sort of for sale at the moment, but it's one of those cars. Every time you get in it, you think, why would you ever want to sell this car?
Why
it's
is it?
Brilliant.
This is important. You can't walk past this. This is, how many Speedsters have you had?
Three.
This is your third?
It is.
You sure it's not your fourth?
It's my third.
Okay. Why is it for sale again?
Because I'm a car dealer, I can't help myself. It's an addiction. It's an addiction. I always feel like I need to be moving forward, but to move forward, you sometimes have to go backwards as well.
Or sideways.
So when you sell this one, what's going to happen then?
He's going to buy a Speedster.
I will feel lonely without a Speedster in my life.
I'll tell you exactly what happened. It happened exactly the same as the last two times. It'll be absolutely fine. He'll put the money in the bank in 3 months' time at about 11:30 on a Friday night. I'll get, why did I sell that Speedster? Why did you tell me to sell that Speedster? I just didn't.
That's why I'm asking. So we all now know that you're a sentient, mature, individual man who's made an exclusive decision by himself to sell this car. It's nothing to do with anybody else.
No,
so
come
and regret it again. We told you so.
Although, when I tell my son, I've got three children and my youngest son is four. So whenever I tell him off for anything, he really doesn't like being told off. And
Where does he get that from?
Yeah. For me, but he knows the way to my heart. So when I tell him off, he starts welling up and he just goes, I'm going to sell the Speedster back to a Porsche dealer. That's what he says to me. Anyway, okay. I'll get to the end of my question because Neil's week would have been more exciting. I got to Bicester. I saw these legends, and I rarely get jealous, and I'm not jealous at Bicester, but I love walking around and seeing those cars, thinking, wouldn't it have been cool to have been him or her this morning driving that here? And obviously it's full of those, for everything from an incredible DLS just to a ratty hot rodded 911 to the Audi estate car that Neil threw there. But actually, one of the Alpines are winking at me at the moment. That's
every home should have one. Thing.
But the one odd car that just stood out to me there. And they just nailed the design, is the DB9. I think it's such a great looking car.
Convertible automatic idea.
Yeah, it's just, and there was a beautiful one outside, but there was a beautiful one just parked outside the hangar. I don't know why. It's just a very, very pretty car.
It is. Yeah.
29,995.
It's full of Ford bits and the convertible.
I'm not talking about any of that. Well, they're allowed to be flawed. I just think it's just a beautiful
coupe, not the Volante. Yeah.
No, I automatic Volante, full shit experience.
Full shit experience.
V12,
broken roof with a floppy rear wiper.
I'm trying not to drink this month. You lot are going to drive
with
me
the orange car. With the orange indicator lenses at the back.
Just stop it. Right.
Just like movies.
God's sake, there's a limit to this shite that we can deal with. Volante automatic.
Lovely.
Neil's turn.
Clifford, have a word with yourself, all right? You've gone too far.
Yeah.
Right. That was 17 minutes of shite. Let's carry on with Neil Clifford. What did you do? Can you go longer and harder than they would love it about your week in cars?
No. I can keep it short. I sold two cars.
Ooh.
Did you?
I sold two cars from the 1960s.
Right.
And I bought two cars.
Ooh.
So, so that's cool. And as I've said too many times, I had pneumonia in the middle and bought an Audi, which was probably the last time that I, A, will hopefully get pneumonia or buy an Audi. But anyway.
But if you had the choice, it would be pneumonia.
And you know what? That car, the RS2, I bought the RS2 and I bought it off Collecting Cars. And it typifies that word? It summarizes completely the cool butt shit car that we discussed last week. Slightly different to favorite shit car, as we know. There's those two different categories, because if you treat it like a modern car, it's rubbish.
Yeah.
All modern cars are basically better than the old cars. In theory, if you've got a left brain, of course the modern cars are better. Why have an Integrale when you can have a Yaris? Of course a Yaris is so much better. It's just an Integrale is sort of shit, but it's much cooler, right?
Yeah.
And if you treat the RS2 like a modern car, like I've got the modern 5 Series, it's just so rubbish, really, because it's really firm and the plastic's all a bit cheap and it feels brittle and it squeaks and the stereo didn't really bloody work until I sorted out the Bluetooth and, you know, it's a 25-year-old car, whatever it is. But then it's really cool as well. If you treat it like it's a 930 turbo estate, which is what it is, if you treat it like a vintage thing, it's magical. And you drive it, you know, I'm sounding like a very professional car tester now. If you drive it always above 4,000 revs, so you're always in the band of the turbo thing, because it is very, very laggy. But I like lag. I enjoy turbo lag. I'm not negative about turbo lag, because it's that whooshy feeling is lovely.
It's the anticipation.
Yeah. So if you drive it like an old bus crap old car, it's one of the best old crap cars ever, I think. So
I like the turbo lag in my TD5 Defender. It's got slightly more power.
Oh, it's good in the Defender. I like a bit of lag in a
bit
Defender.
Of turbo
lag is a positive. It's a positive thing.
You just feel that here it comes. And it just,
whoa.
But it's only a positive if the gap before its arrival doesn't become really annoying. So you've got to have enough. It's got to have a bit of a pre-spool to give you some shove and then give you some whoomph. When it's useless is when Ferrari for years made engines that didn't feel turbocharged. Like the first 488, that first really great engine they made, the whole idea was to make it feel normally aspirated. You're there going, no, you've missed out on your party trick. That's having the best joke in the room and never delivering it. So McLaren have always given us a bit of, and I love that. That's what makes the McLarens more exciting. It's actually, a lot of it's just down to the boost.
I think so. That's right. And the funny thing was, I got in the car and we took the dog actually, and it was early in the morning. It was bloody freezing, and I convinced my lovely wife to come with me. And then the only thing she said when we got in it, she said, is this new? Have I been in this before? I'm like, no, darling, it's new. She said, will it make it? That's the only wife anxiety, isn't it? We're pleased we're not going to break down. We've got the dog. It's cold. And it feels like one of those cars that could break down.
Yeah, it does, yeah. It feels like the clutch could go.
Yeah.
Okay. And that, this is for you car magazine geeks and aficionados. The RS2 was, I think, the subject of one of the cheekiest headlines or covers of a car magazine ever. It was factually correct, but it really stretched the boundaries of what is allowable.
As the 0-30 thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Faster than
the McLaren F1.
Well, it was jumping.
They managed to drop the clutch on one and make it go 1/10 quicker to 30 miles an hour. Yeah. And that was the basis of an entire article.
It was a good photo, though, because the car was jumping over a little hill, wasn't it?
Good marketing, that. Good clickbait, that.
Was it a blue one?
Blue, yeah.
Blue.
Well, it was called RS Blue in the beginning.
That was RS Blue, was it?
Okay. RS Blue. It's the same colour as Nagara, but it was first called RS Blue and then they changed the name.
Oh, I like it. We're being out-nerded by Clifford. That's a lovely touch. Yeah. RS Blue, there you go.
One day we'll come unprepared onto a podcast and we'll just name colours from the colour palette and we'll have to come up with as many manufacturer names.
Oh, by the way, and also someone bought me this.
That's nice.
Oh, I love that.
Bird custard, that.
Yeah.
Love
and if it. Anyone knows my one day of fame on Piston Heads about 20 years ago, that is a lovely little gift that I got for a Secret Santa.
Nice.
The unprepared coloured podcast. I was thinking it could be like that episode from Blackadder. You remember Dr. Johnson's dictionary? We just basically invent colour names.
Oh,
it's mush and similarities.
I'm sure we will invent them, and then the comments will rip us to shreds.
We can invent colours interfrastically.
Right,
here we go.
Chris Harris, what did you do this week in cars?
Right, do you know what? This has gone on too long. We can wait for mine next week. I've had enough of them. I bought an E61 M5,
yes,
which is still going, but we've just filmed it. It was sideways at Landau as it kicked over 128,000 miles. I'm clearly having another breakdown, literally. But it's going to create some great stories. And Neil and I owned the slightly shit old German estate corner of the Bicester Scramble. We were both very proud. And I made a point because my car has got that weird old BMW waxy smell.
Yeah.
And his Audi had the weird old Audi smell. It was like going to visit two old aunts in an old home. And there's that vague smell of piss in the corridors. It was
because the knickers haven't been changed for a while.
Yeah, they just smelled a bit. Our cars smelt like they'd been used badly.
Yeah.
But I love the Scramble. Thank you for everyone that came along and had a chat. I sat in the boot of my car and sold many pairs of twat sunglasses. I met lots of old friends, new friends. They are joyous events. They're really
lovely.
They're a good thing. So here we go. We're not even halfway through this. We're going to have to cut these short.
We might have to cut a couple short. Oh, we're going to go into servicing.
Edward, much as we love you, you gave us 27 minutes on going to Mayfair without even seeing a car. Here we go.
I forgot to tell you what I ate.
Should you service your car every year? Actually, you don't need to do that anymore. Or is it a con? I think this is a really good subject.
It's a con. It's a con.
Can I read a text message from a friend of the pod?
Hmm.
We'll start this obviously in the everyman's category. Servicing option number one, paid individually, 6 months, 1,000 kilometers, £32,500 plus VAT. 12 months, 5,000 kilometers, £65,000 plus VAT.
Valkyrie.
24 month, 10,000 kilometers, £123,000 plus VAT. And the 36 month service, 15,000 kilometers, is £78,000 plus the VAT. Please note.
Is it Williams FW14?
Pardon? Say that
Williams
again.
Williams FW14. What is this?
No, Valkyrie. This is a Valkyrie. But I'm happy to say that Gaydon have also offered a servicing option number two, which is a 3-year servicing plan for £230,000 plus VAT. Now, I would be very surprised if in 5 years' time there are any Valkyries that have done over 5,000 kilometres. So it'll be a good question to wonder how they've decided to service their cars during that 3-year period.
Sorry, can you read out the big number and how long it covers you for?
36 months, £230,000 plus VAT.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I didn't think I could become more apathetic towards this type of vehicle than I am now. I was already, but what's the point? It's just all, it's ridiculous.
Made up numbers.
It's nonsense.
It's made up numbers.
Go and buy a racing car and do it properly. Don't arse about with this stuff.
It will cost less.
Go and be a real man or a real woman. Yeah. Don't cock about in this stuff. I don't get it. Yeah. Sorry. That's ridiculous.
A Cosworth DFE rebuild schedule wouldn't cost you that. And that's just the most complicated, silly, because it's a proper engine.
Yeah. So Neil, you tell us why you think it's all, and I've just got to go back and quote you, bollocks.
Well, I think the smart people are the Italians. They ignore the whole bloody thing because they know that it's rubbish. If you I don't know, got a 458 or a 488 and you're doing 2,000 or 3,000 miles a year and you get your little text from Dick Lovett just to let you know, Mr. Clifford, your service is almost due. I think it's completely ridiculous to take it in there and do...
Can I interrupt one second there? When you get that message, do you think they're talking about the car being serviced or you being serviced?
Oh, the car. I service myself.
Well, I think these things blend at that point in the Ferrari ownership.
Yeah. But I honestly, I'm with the Italians on this. It's only about your insecurity of worrying about the value of that car when you come to sell it and the man comes round your house or you take it into the dealer and they get the little book out and they go, oh, there's a bit of a gap there, isn't there? Not so sure we're going to be able to get that price you want, Mr. Clifford. So it's only... Those new cars don't break down. The oil doesn't all go to toffee, does it, in 14 months? I think it's an EBITDA thing for profitability because I'm sure 20% of Ferrari's profits or 10% are driven through, or Porsche, through servicing and selling the parts. And not many miles get done in these cars. So I think it's all a bit of a bloody ripoff, really. That would be my view on it.
I quite like getting cars serviced regularly.
Yeah, but you're Mr. OCD.
Because, no, it's not about OCD. Yeah, it is about OCD. No, it's a little bit of love.
If you don't get it serviced, how do they get cleaned?
Well, actually, it is possible to clean them without them being serviced at the same time.
I'm joking.
A little bit of love, isn't it? I've got this sort of thing where...
It's like taking your dog to the poodle parlour now and again.
Yeah.
You were into that kind of thing. Yeah. It's just the thought that there's some fresh, clean oil with no little bits in it. That gives me a warm and fuzzy feeling. It's a bit of love for the car.
Bits in it. You don't go on Smarties inside the oil thing.
Right, can I just reply to Neil's original point there? I think we're conflating the idea of the sports car that doesn't do a lot of mileage and people that do lots of miles. I think, to be clear, if a car sits around and it's a bit of a, you know, show-off object or it gets used very occasionally, its oil probably isn't going to need replacing. But it doesn't mean that someone shouldn't give it a good once-over, make sure the seals are okay, go over it.
Yeah.
You know, just have someone that knows what they're doing. Just replace the tyres. Look at the brakes. The worst thing you can do is leave stuff with hard tyres. I'd be replacing the tyres every other year more than the oil. But cars that do high mileages... God, they really do need maintenance. And I remember going to, about 10 years ago or so, I was trying to get Castrol to sponsor something I was doing. Total failure. But I went along to one of their R&D premises in the UK, where they have every car manufacturer that works with Castrol puts its new engines, when ICE was still a thing, development a thing. They have, you know, the endless benches running these engines at different RPM cycles and, you know, all computer controlled. And, you know, it's a science. And the way that they specify their service schedules is just around the safety tolerances for that engine. And they've driven them to failure. And they've worked out that if you know, you could probably double that interval that they suggest. But that to be safe and to make sure all the lawyers are okay and everyone's happy, they halve them or whatever the calculation there is. and you adhere to it. And if you don't adhere to it, you do lots of miles. At some point, that engine will shit itself.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, you're just lucky.
Yeah, the reciprocating parts.
Yeah, you know, they're complicated mechanical objects with fine tolerances, and I think you have to respect that. But I do think that, you know, if you've got a car that does very few miles, I've got one car that I've owned for coming up on 3 years that I haven't. I do a few miles in it, but I don't service it. I haven't serviced it, and it's a bit of an experiment for me.
R129.
Yeah, it's that one. It feels like such a great car.
It will never break.
And the oil in the dipper looks so nice and clean still. But I think if you dip some oil...
That's because the bits in it are so heavy. They're all at the bottom of the sump.
But I think, you know, it's interesting. Those people that I know that are really good spanners do change the oil quite regularly in their cars. They do.
Yeah, I would do that. I would do it more myself. I mean, the reciprocating parts of an engine are sacrificial.
Yeah.
That's never been said out loud before. No. They are designed to wear out.
Yeah.
And that's why bearings look and are designed the way they are, so that the really expensive bits, big ends and crankshafts, can be protected. So, you know, any revolution. So it's just, that is a bit OCD, but there's a bit of love and thinking, I've done my bit for the car and it's got some clean oil in it. It's like having clean water for the goldfish, isn't it?
It's not. I've never had a goldfish. Being. It's not a wine.
look, here we go.
Actually, you know, you're really not feeling too much clean water for your goldfish.
Is that a bad thing?
Within what Chris Cooper's just said, and the fact that, you know, there's a bit of friction between Mr. Clifford, who'd rather just let the things sit there and not be serviced, and Mr. Cooper, who likes it. How about this for a scenario? If you actually have been brought up, acknowledging the fact cars needed servicing when we were younger. And actually, if Chris Cooper said many months ago that a fast car is a nicer car to drive, I used to really believe that a recently serviced car was better. Because there was someone that looked after my old cars and he was really good and it would just come back better. You know, and I thought it was great and I'd acknowledge the fact that the oil had to be bedded in and everything else, but the car felt great. But then once, a long time ago, I gave a car to a reputable garage and it came back driving worse than I gave it in. And I've always been skeptical of garages since. I thought they were miracle workers and they let me down. And even now I get in cars sometimes and go, they've played with the alignment on this. This drove better before. What have they been doing?
Yeah, that is bad.
There is a little bit of an analogy between that and watches, good watches.
Yeah, probably, they do
say about good watches, unless there's something wrong, do not let the expert open the thing up.
And I think modern cars really suffer because they use so many more plastic components and fasteners that once you've unfastened them and fastened them again, they're never quite the same. And I think, you know, quite often your car comes back with a squeak that wasn't there.
Yeah, I hate that.
So I can see both sides of it. But I do think that Ferrari, we're cynical about Ferrari, but they tacitly acknowledged the nonsense of the yearly service when they said 7 years free service, didn't they? They just said, it's all bollocks. Within reason, we're not going to try and make money out of servicing.
I don't disagree with any of that. I don't agree with all that. Neil, running in.
I don't do it.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that.
How often do you buy a new car?
More than Manish.
A brand new.
I tell you what, I'm trying to think. I did do it on one car. I can't bloody remember. The R.
Yeah. The R.
Yeah. I thought that was such a special and is such a special thing that I was never going to sell. I'm going to be buried in it. I'm dead.
Also, those engines, I can remember going to, let's say, the person that develops those cars, and he gave me a very early version of something like that to drive around in. And he phoned me and said, how many miles has it done? And I said, oh, it's about 400. He went, well, you can't drive it faster. I went, you're joking. He went, no. It's on the bench, but with all our engines, we respect and run them in because they're better. Yeah. 10,000 kilometers, you'll know it's better.
Wait, how long did you run it in for, Neil? And what does
500, run I think. I did exactly what I was told on that car.
What is that? Is that like 1,000 miles at no more than 60 miles an hour?
At least 4,500 to 6,000 revs.
You've got to vary the revs a bit.
Vary the revs.
I've got a fast Ducati motorcycle that I've had for 5 years that technically I've still not run in.
Yeah.
They're the worst. Try running in a fast bike. They want you to do 1,000 miles of building up to it. Well,
I could take years.
You know.
Actually, what I remember, now you've got an M5, could you, as a service to mankind, do some numbers on it with the power button pressed in and then out?
It makes a massive difference, because I went for...
I'd just like to see the numbers.
I went for a speculative overtake, having stopped for fuel yesterday, and I didn't have the power button engaged, and I was expecting the full 500, and I had a...
Trousers. I didn't have it.
No.
Yeah.
Could you by the way, I had a lovely phone call from... Well, and a message from BMW, the man from BMW yesterday, which was quite lovely. I've told you this on our
yeah. website.
So I've bought this car. It looked a bit familiar. You know, sometimes you think, I've been here before. And it's had a life. It's a long time ago that it was new. And the message just said, Chris, Dash, it is a press car. So this thing, this is Karma. This is a vehicle that I personally abused when it was new. I think I drove it in 2007 to the Nürburgring to see Nick Heidfeld do a lap of the Nordschleife in a Formula One car. So that's how long ago it was.
That was our first VLN race.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
I think that's cool, though. That car would have been looked after better than I would have looked after it.
It made a few noises today, but actually the engine and gearbox are magnificent. But I did... It's a press car. That's them quietly saying, ha, 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 ha. And I quite like that. So what we are...
Shall we miss... what do you think, Chris? How much time
do we have? We've done a fair amount. So let's go for... How about... I like the winter's drive. I think it's very wintry at the moment, and I like us all. So Neil has proposed this. You've got a winter's day free for a drive, a big drive from home. Where'd you go? And I suppose that means you're confined by the geography of us being on an island. But
You've got to be home for tea.
Only one day, okay. Yeah. There you go. So Manish, where would you go?
I never thought about this, and this is a drive that I've done, and it's our in-laws live in Middle Barton, lovely farmhouse, and the drive is...
Sorry, where's that, Manish, roughly?
Oxfordshire, okay. north of Oxfordshire. So you basically, the boring bit's getting up the M40, but you come off at Junction 8, and you go Wheatley, Headington, Woodstock, stop there for a really nice... cup of tea and something to munch on. And then on a winter's day, I think there's nothing as beautiful as going to Blenheim Palace. You just go to Blenheim Palace and you can take your dog and you just have a lovely couple of hours walk with your dog in Blenheim Palace. You just walk and walk, go over all the sort of various bridges, grab a little bite to eat in the open air thing where you're freezing away and have a little bacon sandwich or something. And then... go past Glimpton, go like this, HRH, Kiddington, and then I go to my in-laws at Middle Barton, have an early or a late lunch or an early dinner, whatever you want to call it there, and then just head towards Junction 9 and you're back in Belsize Park an hour and 40 minutes later. And it's there's some beautiful country roads on that. There's some beautiful things to see, thatch cottages, old telephone boxes, a few nice pubs. That, for me, is the ultimate Sunday winter's day drive.
And I dare anyone to follow that, because I want to go and do that now. Yeah. So go on then. Edward Love has got his finger up.
Well, so I wrote down last night Cotswolds, Goodwood, and also just an empty motorway. But I've just changed my mind, and I'm going to do something I've never done before, and I still want to do it. And a crisp morning would be the perfect day to do it. And I would leave London, and instead of going west, which is the direction I normally depart London, I would go east. And I would go to Whitstable, Margate, Deal, and I would go and skim some stones across the water, and I would go and eat some of the cockles and oysters and all the amazing food that the
Garden of England...
eels, all that stuff, all the amazing food that I see in the Garden of England.
I think that's good, Ed. Big skies there. Big skies, beautiful.
Yeah, and I've never been north of Canterbury or Dover in that area, and I'd love just to go and crisp day, speedster, roof down, woolly hat.
Now you sold it by then.
Eat some cockles, all that sort of stuff.
Whose speedster are you going to borrow?
If I sold it, then I'll just buy another one.
I mean, yeah, the only tiny flaw with that plan is, given how our sewage is going, I hope you've got a couple of days off and a damn good flush.
Yeah, no, we'd be fine. There's no such thing as food poisoning.
I grew up in Whitstable.
Did you?
Yeah, that's where my brother and I, I got my brother Mike. When we were little, our thing was dinghy racing, and we were just obsessed with dinghy racing. And we grew up in Kent near, I've said this before, Pluckley, England's most wanted village. And Whitstable, which is on North Kent, goes sort of half an hour, 40 minutes away. We would go every weekend when we were in our early teens until we left school. And Thames Estuary, it is a bit muddy. And Whitstable then was a bit of a sort of a forgotten now. It's very gentrified, and there was Pearson's Oyster Bar. I always remember going to Pearson's Oyster Bar. And somebody always used to say, it's owned by one of the Cray brothers or one of their heavies or something like that. There was some really, really good East End gangster connection to Pearson's Oyster Bar.
Lovely.
And present owners may know nothing about this, but it's a nice drive that way. That is a, I think that's a very good, and Margate and Ramsgate now, that's all been Tracy Eminified, hasn't it?
It's very, has it?
Yeah, Ramsgate now is quite.
Don't spoil all the surprises for me. I haven't been yet.
It's great. You'll love it. No, I'm saying you'll love it. I think it's a really good call.
Neil Clifford, where are you going with your day off?
Right, I'm doing
as your employees toil away flogging handbags.
None of you lightweight 3-hour drives. I'm going full on 14 hours. I'm leaving at 4 a.m. I'm driving west. I haven't done this. I was talking to my mate about it today. Like, we've got to do this in February. Bloody work, shit, weather, no sunlight. What are we going to do? Go west. I'm going to Wales. And you know, I'm a quarter Welsh, actually.
Didn't know that.
Yep. But I don't really know the middle bit. I don't know the west coast bit. You know, my family are sort of Cardiff and all of that. So I know that bit. And so
Aberystwyth and
Barry Island and all that. You know, I was there in the 70s when everyone had big gold bracelets. But I haven't been to that middle bit. So I'd like to go, where was the place where the prisoner? Where is that?
Oh, God, that was up north.
Yeah, I haven't been there either. I want to go there. I've never been there. Everyone tells me it's magic.
I stayed there for a night. It's outrageous. They built an Italian town in North.
Yeah, Clough William Ellis, isn't it? Yeah.
Why don't we all? We should all be bloody going there and see.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Port Merion.
Port Merion.
Yeah.
But I want to try. Even though I like the big skies of the east, you've got to find a hill. You've got to find some mountains or some.
There's no shortage up there, boss.
You're exactly.
Very near Snowdonia, you're fine.
Over the, you know, either Brecon Beacons or the Black Mountains, and end up in a nice little, I don't know, seaside place with scrambled eggs and big loads of coffee, and have a chat and laugh with your mates, and then take the long way home and get home for 6 or 7 o'clock at night. That's what I'm going to do this in February, actually.
Well, if everyone lets you down, I'll come. Yeah, we'll go in separate cars so we can talk to ourselves.
Do a podcast in Port Merion.
Yeah,
we could do it. It's not a million miles from Anglesey.
No, it's not. It's just down the coast.
Yeah, I've been to Anglesey and all that.
We've been talking about doing a little.
Get on the beach at Porthmadog as well. Go.
Lovely. I've never been there. I want
to do a podcast. I'm in.
I'd like to say I'd go somewhere else, but I go to Wales. I go driving in Wales most weeks. I'm in love with the place. I love the Welsh accent. I just, you know, JPR, RIP today, obviously.
That is very sad. Yeah, he's still very young.
Training to be an orthopaedic surgeon as well.
I mean, yeah.
Brilliant.
So, what I would do is this, and I've done this before. I've done so many Welsh adventures. Winter is interesting for me because normally I go on my motorcycle. If my hands don't freeze, I always go on my motorcycle because with a visor on, no one can see you. And I love going on my own or with one friend on a motorcycle. But this is the winter and I'm a fair weather motorcyclist, so it has to be a car. What I would do is this. I'd start off like Neil very early, 4:30 in the morning. And I'd want to get to Rosyllie Beach, which is one of the most remarkable, you know, bits of coastline in the UK. Just go and Google it. It's just an amazing beach. I want to get to Rosyllie Beach before around the time the sun comes up. So I'm going to dap it down in Forth and Bristol. And then I'm going to wiggle my way back, A and B roads that I know well, take in loads of good stuff we filmed. I'm going to get to Penny Fan, which is not far from, I'm South Wales for this trip, which is the highest peak in South Wales. I always like to punctuate a good drive with good walk. So I've got my walking boots in the boot. I'm going to scramble up Penny Fan and back down again. That's
love it.
24 hours, I'm knackered. I'm then going to drive across the top of the moor at Cracow, where it's a very familiar piece of road. You've all seen it in films and photographs. Drop down the other side. There's a pub in Cracow called The Bear, where they do a lamb and leek suet pudding, which is to die for. And then after that, I'm going to dap it back for tea and cocktails in Bristol. But I do it regularly, and it's a great thing. This, you know, we're told we shouldn't drive unless absolutely necessary. But you know what? We love cars, and if driving brings you joy, it's therapeutic and it's good for the soul. And I think you can offset it against that. So you know, don't go the whole time. Don't be stupid. But now and again, go and do it.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Love it. Chris Cooper, what would you do?
I go to Portsmouth.
Oh.
I go to Portsmouth. This weekend was a really interesting weekend to drive because it stopped raining. And as part of a farming family, stopping raining, as any farm will say, thank for that. The land is far, far too wet and horrible. It can't do anything. It wasn't very, very cold, so there was no salt on the road. All the rain had washed all the salt away.
Yeah,
it was crispish, not too much wind, no salt on the road. Perfect. You could hear all the bikes around here. You know when it stopped raining and there's no salt, you hear all the bikes going, bah, bah. So Saturday was a really nice day for doing this. I was a student in Portsmouth, I've said before, and I don't know. It wasn't my home like it was for Neil, but I have a bit of nostalgia. I really love Portsmouth. I had a happy time in Portsmouth.
It's a great place, yeah.
And the roads, I used to drive down there in my Mini Cooper before the A3 was effectively dualed the whole way. So before the tunnel at Hindhead.
Yeah.
So given that this is a fantasy, I'd have done it this Saturday, but in 1990.
Okay.
Round the Devil's Punch Bowl, Hindhead.
Round the Devil's Punch Bowl.
Yeah.
And so some of it would have been single carriage race, some of it would have been a bit nice and quiet, very, very crisp. And then I'd branched off, probably just, it must be before Hazelmere, certainly before Petersfield, and driven down the Meon Valley.
Yeah, lovely.
Little villages.
Yes.
The A31, whatever.
Yeah.
Also, that's when you realise that little cars are right for the UK.
Yeah.
Because really, you don't want anything much bigger than a 105 Series Alpha or a Mini or a little hatchback.
Yeah.
That's all you need, isn't it?
Probably an Alpine. We were going to do it last week. Let's do it in a future week. Automatic or manual. Because I think the Alpine A110 would be better with manual. We'll discuss why that might be true later week. But little Alpine, very small footprint. Drive down the Meon Valley, get back onto is it Fort Nelson, Neil, just on the hill above Fareham? That sort of, you can drive up to it and you see the whole of Portsea Island and Langston Harbour and Portsea Harbour.
Yeah, my brothers will kill me because they all worked up there. I can't remember the bloody name of it. But
Fort Nelson is that.
From Monster Burger for £5.
Yeah, top of the hill there.
Yeah.
And then just drive down Eastern Road.
Yep.
Down the eastern side of Portsea Island, because Portsmouth is an island, as those of us who are not Neil and I might not know, and drive down via round Langston Harbour
to Eastney. Mm-hmm.
And
the Eastney. Cup for an espresso.
Yeah. And I sit on that pebble beach.
Yeah.
And you look out to see one of the towers, you see the Nab Tower, which is sort of out a bit east of the eastern end of the Isle of Wight. And then look out to Ryde and Bembridge, and then just look round and you see the other forts, and then you see Southsea and so forth, and just walk along the beach, that lovely walk, all along Pebble Beach, past the piers, into sort of Southsea where the greens are, get some fish and chips.
Magic.
Walk back and back up. The days are shorter. I quite like daytime driving in the winter because it's just
You always did at Nürburgring as well.
That is true.
I'll tell you what, that beach, I think that beach was where they dropped me off in the boat in 75. I remember being dragged along that by the officers of the law. They let me stay.
Shame.
Yeah, it's a good place. That's a good recommendation, Portsmouth. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's what I'd do. That's what my favourite. Mm.
I want fish and chips now. I've got my curry waiting for me. I want fish and chips.
Beer battered.
Here we go. We're going to do our two-car garage. This is a real... I tell you what, we're thankful for staying with us because Edward, who we love dearly, spent 48 minutes talking about how he walked to Mayfair.
Longer than that.
To Ciccone's to have his... whatever, a burrata for starter. here we go. The two-car garage today is a reaction to last week's two-car garage, which was parsimonious and real life. This one... isn't quite so. I've not read it before. I don't read fluently. I apologise because I haven't practised.
Can we just point out who it's been submitted by?
If you want to know what SF90s and GT3 Tourings are worth, go on to collectingcars.com.
What's the SF90 going for now?
It's no reserve. It's just sold for £294,000.
Wow! How many miles has it done?
665.
Oh my dearie God.
Yeah. New SF90, £294,000.
Well, they've stopped making them now because they couldn't sell them.
Okay. Has it got a plaque on it that says press preparation special engine?
Yeah, so
optimized engine,
2,000 brake horsepower.
Yeah, here we go. Optimized. So this is from engine. Peter Mackay.
He's the Scottish motorsport commentator, I think.
He is. He's very good. Okay, right.
Yeah. So Peter,
thank you very much. Peter. I apologise. It's been a long day. Suggestion for two-car garage. You are a lifelong Porsche enthusiast who has built your family Scotch whisky business into an empire with several successful brands. Couldn't be me, I'd drink it all. Throughout your career, you've climbed the Porsche ladder, starting with a 986 Boxster, progressing through various 911s, and now possess an enviable collection near Swindon. You yearn to race one of Weissach's many historic gems, but they remain out of reach with most company profits reinvested into more maturing stock for the future. However, a global drinks giant emerges and offers you an obscene sum for your envied Scotch empire. This is lovely. The resulting funds allow you to buy a car worthy of entry to Porsche's prestigious Rennsport reunion. Budget is £100 million. One Porsche to race at the event and one Porsche to arrive in. Keep up the great work with the podcast. It's essential listening for car addicts. Why did Edward's Mayfair story go on so long? How did he even know?
I told him. I put it on my newsletter. What Edward did for lunch today.
Right, I tell you what, I'm going to ask you to do something that, as fellow addicts, none of us can do, but you're all terrible at it. Can we apply some brevity to this, please? Chris Harris. Oh, that's me. Chris Cooper.
Chris Harris, go.
I think I know this. I think I know because my wife, Lynn, used to work for the William Grant Scotch whisky firm. It's one of the very few. So I think, Peter, let us know in the comments.
Is he the bloke that wrote and sang Electric Avenue?
No, that's somebody else.
That Eddie Grant?
I think it must be William Grant, Balvenie, and all those kind of things.
Brevity, Christopher. Brevity.
I had loads, but so it's not the 2018 Grello, the last one that Richard Leitz won in.
Oh,
Nick Tandy could have been,
yeah,
but it's not. It's not the 87 Rossmann's 962C, Derek Bell's last win.
I do love brevity.
It's got to be that one.
Golf.
The 917. It didn't win Le Mans.
Yeah.
917K, Steve McQueen car. And I think the road car would be, because I reckon this must be worth about £70 million now.
Yeah.
It's the 993 GT2 that Monkey sold.
It was right-hand drive, wasn't it?
I've been waiting all day to do that.
It wasn't really rare right-hand drive, was it? Because they're worth a lot.
It wasn't one of the 12. Sod off. Right, here we go. Manish? What are you going to have? Two cars.
My interpretation of this is that I can spend as much or as little money as I want on a Porsche. I am going for me, literally the most beautiful.
906. 908.
910. It's like 910.6. 2 litres, 200 horsepower. I mean, just it.
Axles in front, ankles in front of the front axle line. If you crash the paddock, you're dead.
I get it. Yeah. And I think you can only turn up to one of these things. You'd have to steal it. Apparently Jerry Seinfeld owns it. but that is McQueen's original 1979
11S. Yeah.
I found Bonhams. Bonhams was the last time I could find it priced. 2011, it went for $1.3 million.
Okay.
Slate grey?
Sorry?
Slate grey. It has a sunroof, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Right, Neil Clifford.
Yeah, there's a photo.
New cars.
There it is. McQueen in the car there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we have two cars for Neil Clifford, please?
Okay. You're all so bloody wrong. It's unbelievably embarrassing.
Sure.
There's only one. The coolest car in the world, I think, road car. Actually, they're both road cars. It's not just about the coolest Porsche. It's the coolest car ever. The Count Rossi 917 road car.
Yeah.
You know, that's
your road car then.
Yeah, no, that's sort of my road car, but racing, because I'm doing because I don't really like track days, as you know.
We're going to change that.
So I'm doing two road cars, but I'm not sure a 917 is that practical a road car.
Oh, of course it is.
The silver 917, I think it's chassis 30. We know who owns this car, probably one of the coolest car dudes in the world. And it's just bloody fantastic. I mean, a 917 for the road, silver with tan, Alcantara, just the coolest thing, cooler than any bloody McLaren F1, to be honest. And then as a road car, and I have been fortunate to own one of these cars, and I'm not stacking up to the 100 million. I think I had you value the 917, but let's say that's 50 million. I'm only spending another two, so I've got 48 million quid left to service my cars every year for 50,000 years, is a 918, because I just adore the 918.
Yeah, I know.
And if you...
Why have you not got one of those?
I've had one.
And I
stupidly sold it, really.
What colour was it?
He bought MC's one.
Yeah, it wasn't really a good spec because it was white, which is cool in white, but then
yellow
piping instead of the... I like the acid green, to be honest, but I'd have a PTS. I'd find it in Germany because they're all left-hand drive anyway. A Brewster green 918
just for change,
leather, debadged, no acid green. I think it's just a mega car. It's a 918. It's a mega car. And you can daily it. You can use it every day for the rest of your life.
Right, I'm going to go next because Edward doesn't like waiting, so I'm going to go next. I tried to not come across as a complete arsehole, but there's a car in the Porsche Museum that's a racing car that's got my name on the side of it. So it's the only car I'd ever want to buy. It's a car that I raced at Nürburgring in 2011. It's a 3.8 RS street car. And it's got my name on the door, and it sometimes gets shown in the museum. So that's the car I'd buy. If I had all the tea in China, I'd go to Porsche and say, "Can I buy it?" They wouldn't sell it to me. I've asked, but it's pretty special. So I want that. The road car is much more complicated and requires. Bearing in mind, we've got to go to Rennsport, and I've got to make an entrance, and I've got a lot of money left over. I think even Porsche would struggle to charge me much more than a couple of million quid for a 3.8 RS. So I've got, give or take, a few bennies. I've got $98 million left. I'm going to go to the Porsche board and I'm going to say to them, I want to buy the entire tooling and production line for the W124 500E or E500 that you made in the late 80s, early 90s. I want to buy the line and I'm going to build a plant in the Bristol area to start making W124 500Es again. I can't use the word Bristol, so I'm going to use a town nearby like Keynsham. I'm going to call it the Keynsham Killer, right? It's going to have 600 horsepower, but it's going to look absolutely standard, same wheels, early car. You can only buy it with cloth seats. Chassis number 001 through to 005 will be made for my fellow addicts. We will all turn up to Rennsport in our special Keynsham Killers that actually are 500 Beautiful. Of these. There you go.
Beautiful.
Edward, love it.
Mate.
But you can pay for your own fucking servicing.
There's a lovely one coming up on Collecting Cars.
The Keynsham Killer comes with a 3-year servicing package. It's €400,000. mine's pretty simple. I'm going to have a 996 GT1 LM for the track and a 996 GT1 road car for the road.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's special, not
Yeah.
Right. Should we try a little bit of music before we go? Because we've only been going for about 3.5 hours. But has this gone over a day, this podcast?
It's about a day, yeah.
We did 30 hours on which table Edward chose at Ciccone's.
We did.
You've wasted more time talking about what I didn't talk about.
I know, but that's what makes this podcast special, Ed.
Next week, Eddie buys a new speedster. Right. So I'm going to go my music first. So this is, I don't think we mentioned this track yet. I think this might be the absolute peak 80s pop song. And the album it comes from is sensational. And it's by such an unlikely artist, whatever you call her. It's Grace Jones's Pull Up to My Bumper, Baby.
Oh,
if you put this on, first of all, a great pop song should be impish and naughty. The lyrics are absolutely outrageous.
They are.
If you play it on a good hi-fi, you realise it was produced by geniuses, and it just kicks the shit out of a hi-fi. Go and listen to it tomorrow. It's fantastic tune. Who's next? Chris Cooper.
So, it reminds me, Slave to the Rhythm, Grace Jones. Oh, what?
That's good.
Yeah. What amazing. But my one I chosen was the first album I ever bought. ELO. Blue Sky. So the song I wanted is Mr. Blue Sky.
Oh, yeah. Lovely song.
Mr. Blue Sky.
Quite a sad song.
Because the sun was out this weekend for the first time in forever. And I thought about Mr. Blue Sky, which I love.
Manish, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go a little classical. Bach, Concerto in D minor, BBW 974. This is the blue sky on a Sunday morning in Belfast Park. That's all it is. There's Primrose Hill just on the horizon. It's just beautiful.
Who's the artist? Sorry,
Bach.
Great.
Bach has written this. This is absolutely beautiful. JS.
974.
BBW Concerto in D minor. BBW 974. Just listen to the piano. Let it suck you in.
That's my education for the week. Edward Lovett.
Mine's very similar to Manish's. It's music by Deep Swing.
Very good. What's it called?
It's called In the Music by Deep Swing. I heard it the other day for the first time in a very long time, but I listened to it just to proof check it before offering it up here. And the version I listened to in my 3-minute drive to work this morning was total dog shit. So I'm going to find a better edit and make sure that one is added to the list.
Do that. I listened to one of yours. Sorry, was it Zimmer? What was the one?
Yes. Did you like it?
I actually thought that was all right.
Very good tune.
Did.
Very
all
good
of my choices are good. They just don't sound very good when Manish is explaining how romantic his choices are.
Yeah. Neil Clifford, what are you going for?
I spent one of my days at Christmas moving my record player to set up in my a little room to listen to records. And the first album I put on my little record player was Hounds of Love, Kate Bush, because I love Kate Bush.
Dr. Bush's daughter.
And Hello Earth. Very spooky, wonderful to drive to with the roof down, because it's all about looking up at the stars. That's cool.
Very nice.
Did you do the corner weights on your turntable and all that fun stuff people do with spirit levels and stuff?
We almost got away with it. We almost persuaded the listeners that you were normal, but you've spoiled it at the last minute, haven't you? You've gone there. Yeah. Did you corner weight your turntable?
No.
That's the thing.
I know it is.
Do you G-load your tonar? Do you do that? Do you actually do
G-load? Got a little grammometer.
We need to do hi-fi because I've not had a record player in ages, and I'm going to get something like a Riga, the classic one.
I've got a planar 6. Can I just say, I had lunch with John Watson a few weeks ago, and it was just one of the most enjoyable lunches I've had in ages. He's the fucking biggest turntable head.
Is he?
What? So you start talking about it, he goes, but that only costs about £10,000. And you say, well, what do you have, John? And then you sit there and you realize his hi-fi is worth more than your own.
Wow.
He's just legend. He is unbelievable, his kit.
Chris, we should actually. Were you with Paul Michaels? Because I saw a picture of them together.
I met him separately. But honestly, his kit. I had no idea. He's such a massive vinyl head.
I love him even more.
Totally lovable man.
The other thing about this week is. I do like a biro. I used to use fountain pens, but they're not useful in the modern world. But there's the Bic biro that's got, it's a bit thicker. It's a 1.6 mil thing.
Oh, what's mine? I have to have a blue Bic pen.
The ink that comes out of these has got a gooey texture, and they really are very satisfying to write with. Go and buy one and try it. It's worth knowing.
I'm more Uniball.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, but that there's but this these
that,
are,
that's thicker than the blue. That's that yours. What's this one? Doesn't have a.
That's one mil. Yeah. That's one mil. This is 1.6.
That's more unctuous.
Could you buy me one of those, Christopher? Blue ink.
Edward, I bought two packets, one of which is for you already. It's arriving tomorrow.
I'll swap one Bic pen for two rear tyres.
Okay. Tomorrow, I'm going to Tank Barrett to drop off my Delta Integrale to have the minor matter of a new engine fitted. And then I'm going over in my E61 M5 to have a man who knows all about these things to tell me how shit it is. So I've got a terrible day coming up tomorrow. It's basically dental surgery for cars. it's been a pleasure speaking to you. I'm so sorry this has gone on so long. And I'm so sorry that Chris Cooper lowered the conversation at the end there. We'll see you next week.
See you later.
Yes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.